What's new on the slopes and trails of Maine? Ski season kicked off early this year. Sunday River opened on October 19th. Then skiers rejoiced as Mother Nature dumped a lot of snow much earlier than usual for Thanksgiving skiing all over the state. Are you one of the legions who have already strapped on your boots and skis for some early season skiing? Are you hoping to get out there during school break? Well, today on the program, we'll learn what's new for Maine's ski industry, from a new reciprocal pass for Nordic skiers, to improvements at ski areas, to a new exhibit at the Maine Ski Museum. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What's your favorite place to ski? Are you looking for tips on how to ski on a budget, new trails to check out? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Winter is here, and for many Mainers, that means one thing. Time to head to the slopes or trails and get skiing. With me in our studio to talk Maine skiing, Greg Sweetser, the Executive Director of the Ski Maine Association. Megan Roberts, former president of Ski Maine and the first executive director of the Ski Museum of Maine. In 2015, she was inducted into the Maine Ski Hall of Fame and is the author of a new book, Titcomb, A Mountain of Ski Memories. And Gabe Perkins is executive director of Mahoosic Pathways. Thank you all for joining us today. And as always, we want to hear from you in the audience. What are you looking forward to skiing this season? What questions do you have about the industry? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'll start with you, Greg. What's new out there this year?
Well, there's a lot going on in the Maine ski business this year. And, you know, the number one job that we do every year is expanding snowmaking. And Sugarloaf, Sunday River, Shawnee Peak probably took the biggest steps this year with some tremendous new pumping capacity, which is very important. December has been probably the best snowmaking month we've had in a decade, and everybody's making a ton of snow. Shawnee Peak took a big step towards automation. They're able to now make a lot of snow by flipping a switch and controlling the flows by computer remotely, depending on temperature and humidity. And, you know, Mount Abram has, it was incredible the amount of snow they made over the past couple of weeks. And they have new technology, which is, quote, airless. So it uses a very minimal amount of compressed air. Over at Lost Valley, the Shanahan family's doing a tremendous job reinvigorating that ski area. They have, they had the most number of snow guns running ever in the month of December. And they've done a really nice job with their food service. They have a small microbrewery that they've started there right at Lost Valley. And that's proved to be extremely popular. They've been now open year-round and enjoyed tremendous increase of visitors there.
When you talk about improvements in snowmaking equipment, my understanding is that it uses less electricity and less water. Is that accurate?
We're using, to make an acre of snow, that is correct. We're using much less electricity because you're using less compressed air. The amount of gallons of water is still, we're still pumping as much water as we can, and actually we're trying to pump more water so that we can make more snow with fewer kilowatts in fewer hours, because the most efficient time for electric rates is at night. The rates are the lowest. So if we can make more snow, and again, with the automation that's beginning to occur, we can turn the systems on by flipping a switch, basically, take advantage of the best rates, take advantage of the most efficient temperatures. And it's really been an incredible move as everybody tries to reduce their carbon footprint from the snowmaking component.
Megan, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you.
Last time we had you on, you didn't have this book
out.
Right. This is brand new. And it's called Titcomb, A Mountain of Ski Memories. And flipping through it, it occurs to me that even though you've really done a lot of research on the history of the ski resort, it's really more about community, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, and I think calling it a resort is a little bit of an exaggeration.
Okay,
most people think
area.
Of beds.
Ski area. Okay, ski area.
yes, and it's Farmington Ski Club is celebrating 80 years of existence this year. And so that is a long time. So that's before Sugarloaf, before Sunday River, before a lot of the areas. And so I thought it was appropriate that I finally finished it this year. And it is about community. And as you go through the decades, you can see the families that participate. And often it's the next generation down that participates. And it's all about the businesses, the families, the kids.
And how many people it takes to keep...
People it takes to keep it all together. Yes.
Do you, did you uncover any surprises? I mean, I know this is your mountain. This is your place. Mm-hmm. Even having said that, is there anything that you, boy, I didn't know that.
Well, I think that I had had some osmosis with the skiing, the whole history of it through my dad and also just being the club historian for so many years. So I don't know if there are any big surprises. I guess one of them in my research was in the Franklin Journal. It said a big headline of Tommy Stearns becomes the first general manager of Titcomb and nothing else. Nothing in the minutes, so I don't think he did. I think maybe he decided to do something else, but it was right there in the Franklin Journal. So sometimes it was digging around, finding out the truth versus what might have been planning to happen.
Oh, that's funny. Well, Gabe, welcome to Maine Calling. And I want to start, tell us about Mahoosuc Pathways. What is that organization?
Sure, thanks for having me. Mahoosuc Pathways was founded in 2011 with a mission to connect communities through trails. And our broad mission or our goal is to connect Mount Abram in Greenwood to the Bethel Village and the schools and the trail centers there, and then on up to Sunday River. And we started primarily sort of as hiking and mountain biking. And then two winters ago, right before Thanksgiving, an opportunity came to our door, which is to we had an opportunity to take over the Bethel Nordic Ski Center, which is located at the Bethel Inn Resort. We'd never done that before. I was a half-time employee. You know, I used my own laptop to do the work. And over the course of that next month, from Thanksgiving to Christmas 2016, we hired three people. We bought snowmobiles and a whole fleet of ski equipment and rebranded the trail center as Bethel Village Trails. And operating under this nonprofit model, we were able to do just what Megan was talking about, which is have the community be a part of the trail system. And we've now operated for 2 years, two really successful seasons where we've been able to reinvest in the trails, either ski trails or mountain bike trails, and have this great partnership with the Bethel Inn Resort, Gould Academy next door. So we've built connector trails connecting the two systems. And then the Bethel Outing Club provides volunteers as well. But we operate the day-to-day system there, and it's been amazing.
Wow, congratulations. Thanks. So tell me, if somebody wanted to head up there to do some cross-country skiing, how many miles of trails, how difficult are they?
It's a diverse system in that at the Bethel Inn Resort, there's a lot, half of the trails are on the golf course or in the golf course in the summer, so it's really friendly field skiing. And then as you go into the woods, it gets a little more difficult. And we groom about 18 to 20 kilometers right there every day, right at the Bethel Inn. And then as you cross the street to Gould, there's another 15 kilometers. So we're looking at 35 to 40. We do a little bandit trail up to the elementary school. So we provide free skiing for the elementary school students as well. So it's 35 to 40 kilometers is what we pull off every day.
And Greg, this is a big trend, isn't it, to have multi-use trails?
Absolutely. I mean, it's exciting to see what's going on in almost every community around Maine, because people have discovered that investing in building a proper trail network is a great investment, because when it builds an environmentally solid trail, it's a durable trail that does not need a lot of maintenance, and it's a multi-use, so that, as Gabe was saying, I mean, they're hiking on them in the summer. They're mountain biking on these trails now 12 months a year. They're great mountain biking in the summer, and they're great fat tire biking in the wintertime. And they're also Nordic skiing. The Karabasset region has got a tremendous network going. We see it in Maine Hudson Trails. We see it up in Millinocket. We see it in Presque Isle and in Fort Kent. And it's really breathing some life into some of these smaller ski areas that are finding people are there almost every month of the year. I mean, this weather pattern, we're in a perfect example. I mean, it's warm today, warmer than we'd love to see it. We're not getting snow. There's a lot of snow on the mountains, so we're going to have plenty of snow left after this thaw goes through. It's going to warm up, then it's going to freeze up. the mountain biking and the fat biking on the first day that the trails harden up is fantastic. So if somebody's not really in the mood to ski, we're still seeing that those trail networks are offering some great outdoor activity. And then the groomers are going to be out there in a couple of days. The grooming will be great. And, you know, skate skiing, alpine skiing will be right back to, I mean, we're looking for a really nice weather pattern through the whole Christmas break. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to have a great week.
So you're not letting this rain get you down.
Oh, you know, if you're in this business, you really have to be, you got to be an optimist and you got to be hardcore. But again, for most of them, the snowmaking is what has just made it so durable. And we've had record snowfall amounts in November. So in the mountains, they will survive. Now, right on the coast, you know, Riverside, Pineland, Powderhouse Hill in South Berwick, you know, they're going to have a rough slide until we get a little bit more snow. But, you know, they're aware that's going to happen.
And Gabe, I saw a notice on your webpage, please don't go out on the trails today or tomorrow.
Yeah, we groomed last night just to sort of get ready, and we filled in some spots. And this trail center is staffed, but in order to preserve our, you know, we're just starting the season, right? We opened 3 weeks ago, so we're trying to hold the snow for the whole year. So yeah, ask people to stay up today, but that's okay, you know, travel up there, and then we'll be ready to go over the weekend.
And you know, we're seeing that at many of the areas. Saturday was going to be the big opening for all of the community areas this weekend. Many of them have decided to delay until Sunday, you know, so just it'll just in the long run is so much better. I mean, there may be a handful of people that would like to ski on Saturday morning, but you can do a lot of damage to the snowbank. You can leave a deep rut in it that then takes a lot of time and energy to correct. So I think they've all made a really good business decision, and we'll be back in full operation across the state on Sunday.
I think for one of the very first times ever, Nordic high school teams never had to do any dry land training. They started out on the snow, and it's been snowy ever since in Farmington.
We had 11 Nordic centers open on December 1st this year, which was really a record. And in mid-November, we had two alpine areas, Sugarloaf and Sandy River, and two Nordic centers, Millinocket and Quarry Road in Waterville.
I want to ask you all about the next generation. I know many traditional Maine outdoor activities, hunting, fishing, even maybe not so traditional golf, are kind of sports that are having a hard time getting the same kinds of numbers of young people doing them. Are we seeing, Megan, are we seeing the same kind of issue with skiing?
I don't believe so at all. I think there are little variations on it. I think that now ski areas are willing to open up to things like having the features, the terrain parks, you know, which in the 80s, they weren't so keen, some of the small areas on snowboards. And some of them got a little behind the eight ball in allowing snowboarders. So I think now there is an attitude of, well, if it's going to bring people and they're going to enjoy the outdoors, let's try it. And so certainly I know at Tickham that the terrain park has brought in so many people.
How old is the terrain park there?
Oh, it's a good 20.
Oh, really?
Although we've had a half pipe more 25 years. So right as soon as they allowed it, then a half pipe was built.
and tell me, I want to talk to you both, Gabe and Greg, about the explosion of Nordic skiing. I mean, this is, boy, what a difference.
You can't seem to have enough rentals some days for us. I think a lot of people, to get to your question about the next generation, it's a low barrier to entry kind of sport, Nordic skiing, right? So, and you can go out for a couple hours and kind of feel it out. And at a system like ours and at Titcomb, it's the trails can be pretty gentle on your ability level, right? You can learn pretty quickly to take off.
Who are you seeing on your trails? Are these people who are mainly coming from, gosh, within an hour or two? Or are these people who are coming from out of state making a vacation around the trails in the Bethel area?
It's a mix, right? So we're a destination town because of our relationship with Sunday River and our proximity to Sunday River and Mount Abram. So there's a mix of destination people coming up for vacation. Then there's a strong group of seasonal folks from the Massachusetts, Greater Boston area, Portland. And then we have a healthy local population. So it's an interesting mix. But what I like to see are the the people coming up from the Portland area who just want to try something out, try something new outside. They just want to be outside and be out in the woods, something that's close and easy to get to. And we offer that in spades.
And Greg, do you have numbers? Can you quantify the growth in Nordic skiing?
I don't know that I really have the numbers, but one anecdotal note is that I think the fitness trend, I think people are more conscious today about the importance of exercise. I mean, and it's still a long battle. Obesity is out there. But the state of Maine, now we have a director of outdoor recreation. Carol Ann Ouellette has come back to the Maine office. She was former director of the Maine Office of Tourism. She's been at Maine Hudson Trails. And for the state of Maine to make a statement, we're now one of 10 states across the country that have an Office of Outdoor Recreation. I think this is going to elevate not only to the out-of-staters, but to the in-state residents of how vital everything you just said, hiking, fishing, hunting. I mean, being outdoors in Maine is a birthright, and people ought to be out doing it. You know, Pineland is located pretty close to Portland. They're probably one of the busiest Nordic centers in Maine. You know, I don't have the exact numbers, but they have as many participants as some of the smaller alpine ski areas. So it's really been a number. I think the increase of popularity of the skate skiing, which is a great fitness, it's like running on skis, and it's really fun. And once you get the technique, it's really quite enjoyable. But you need groomed terrain for that. And that's what these touring centers offer. I mean, Maine has been famous that you could go in your backyard and you could trudge around on cross-country skis. And you can certainly do that. And it certainly is fun. But it's quite limited because you do it a couple of times and it's pretty tiring.
Well, the combination of the groomed trails and the newer skis that
they aren't as long.
Make it more accessible to folks. Folks, frankly, like me, who was late to skiing, and it's a lot easier than it used to be to put them on the first time and head out.
And at these touring centers, you know, I mean, they're comfortable places to be. You know, they're warm. There's a fireplace. There are people around. You can ski for a couple of hours, come back, have a hot chocolate, and go out again. And like Tikkum, I mean, they're Alpine and Nordic are right out of the same building. Sugarloaf Outdoor Center at the base of Sugarloaf, I mean, they are. Really, that's a real destination, again, because of their relationship to Sugarloaf.
I'm going to squeeze in an email before our first break. This is from Jessica. It says, for Gabe Perkins, how is a ski-dependent town like Bethel preparing for changes due to climate change?
So what we're doing, in particular at the Nordic Center, is or at the Trail Center, Bethel Village Trails, we are investing in improving our trails so you could ski more often on less snow if you make improvements to your trails. Sometimes, you know, people just cut a line through the woods, and that's what some of these trails are on at these touring centers, but we're making improvements in excavation, right, to level out the terrain so we were able to offer something earlier on less snow. And we're also doing things like snow fencing, where it's windy in some of these spots, so any snow that does fall is collecting, and we're able to groom that out. But we're also offering up this idea or this concept, right, of a skiable village. You know, we want to connect as many different things as possible, so a walkable and skiable village, so you're not as in your car as much, and you're able to take in the place.
This is interesting, being able to ski on less snow. What is your goal? Do you have a goal of, we want people to be able to ski when there's only fill in the blank inches of snow?
I don't know what that exact number is, but yeah, it would be under like 6 inches of snow would be the goal, to be able to ski on that and offer something good for as long as the snow's on the ground. Yeah,
I know at Tikkum, once there was just grass, we had just planted grass, and there was just frost. And there were people out there skiing on it because the grass was soft enough.
I love it. We have to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation about skiing in Maine, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Waterville Creates, inviting you to shop a selection of artisan gifts at the Holiday Bazaar at Common Street Arts, November 14th through December 23rd.
The holiday season is a time for traditions. A trip back home, or a tree in the living room, or shouldering through the shoppers looking for just the right gift. And this is a holiday tradition too. I'm John Schaefer. Join me for a musical journey through the longest night and into the new year with the Fall Winter Consort's Winter Solstice Celebration from NPR Music.
Coming up this evening at 10 here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Skiing in Maine. Joining me here in the studio, Gabe Perkins, who is Executive Director of Mahoosic Pathways. Megan Roberts, former President of the Maine Ski Association, first Executive Director of the Ski Museum of Maine, and the author of a new book, Titcomb, A Mountain of Ski Memories. And Greg Sweetser, Executive Director of Ski Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Our number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going now to Josh Christie, who is co-owner of Print Bookstore. He also writes about skiing and outdoor pursuits. Hey, Josh.
Hey. Hey, Greg. Hey, Megan. Hey, Gabe.
Hi.
Josh, how are you?
So tell me, how much skiing have you done so far this season? When did you start?
I started on October 19th, which was the first day of the season here in Maine when Sunday River opened. And I've got maybe 10 days in so far. It being peak retail season here at the store, I don't think I skied at all in December, but I get a lot in really early season this year.
So I love that. If your ski season started October 19th, that means you are 2 months into your ski season.
Yeah, it's old hat now, yeah.
Well, your column in this coming paper, in Sunday's paper, tackles a big question, one we're sure to get during this hour. Is it possible to ski on a budget? And what are your tips to skiing and not breaking the bank?
It is possible. You know, it's a question I've turned over in my head for a couple of years, I think, since the last time I was on the show with Greg when someone called in to ask, and I was kind of flummoxed and unable to come up with an answer on how to ski on the cheap. I think the easiest thing, if you look at skiing kind of as a whole, is Nordic skiing, which you guys have been talking about, and is so much less expensive than downhill. But in terms of downhill, a big trend in the last couple of years to look out for now is buying tickets online early, either buying them direct from a resort or buying them from Liftopia, which is a website started by a Colby grad here in Maine, or a couple other places. It really drives the cost down, you know, up to 50 or 60%.
Some more tips, please.
What you can also do is look at the smaller mountains in the state. There are four mountains in the state now that have day lift ticket prices that are over $50, but that leaves all the other resorts in the state for much less than that. The best deal in skiing in Maine, I think, is still Powderhouse Hill in South Berwick, where you can get a day ticket for the season for just $5, cash only, but it's worth getting the money out of the ATM to do that.
Megan, how much is Titcomb?
24.
Okay.
For that's a full holiday weekend day.
All right.
It's much less the other times.
All right. Well, Josh, thanks so much for calling in. We'll look forward to your column this Sunday in the Maine Sunday Telegram.
Thanks so much.
Great.
And now on the line with us is Teresa Shanahan, Executive Director of the Ski Museum of Maine. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Tell us about the museum and how long it's been around.
Well, the Ski Museum started in 1995 by Don Hayes, Don Fletcher, and Greg Foster. They decided that it was very important to preserve the history and heritage of Sugarloaf. And also, through the time as it happened, it became the Ski Museum of Maine. And we were very fortunate to have Megan there. In the beginning, and now we are in downtown Kingfield on the second floor, and it's a great place to be.
I understand you have a new exhibit opening next week.
Yes, we do. Our Maine Olympians, from the Pine Tree State to the world stage. We were fortunate enough to receive a grant from the King Cummings Charitable Fund of the Maine Community Foundation, which allowed us to hire a professional to design and install the exhibit with the help of our board members. We are also fortunate that Cross Insurance has sponsored this new exhibit, and it explores all the Olympians from the state of Maine. There has been one in every year since 1948, straight through to present day. We've had representatives, and it's all about the Olympians and their contributions to the Olympics.
Wonderful. Teresa, I saw some pictures of school kids visiting the museum. I have to ask, is there a favorite item?
Well, the exhibit hall has changed quite a bit. We have reworked several parts of it. I think they tend to gravitate to the children's corner, which we have in that corner a pair of grass skis, and that always brings out quite a bit of interest by the kids, and they try to use them on the in the exhibit hall. The older kids really enjoy the historical aspect of it. They like to see the old skis, the old ski boots, and ask a lot of really great questions about, you know, bindings and how did they work and so on.
Well, Teresa, thanks so much for calling in. That's Teresa Shanahan, Executive Director of the Ski Museum of Maine. I'm going to go to Deanna, who's calling from Black Mountain. Hi, Deanna. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Sorry. Yeah, we're just very anxious to open and get Mother Nature back on board with us here. We're happy to be opening. A little disappointed that we're going to be opening a little later than scheduled, but we're anxious to get going this ski season.
Why, Deanna, are you opening a little later than scheduled?
Well, it's a little wet and rainy outside today, and we just want to make sure that our conditions are pristine for our customers. We're into preserving our snow conditions and giving them the best possible product.
I have a note here that you have new snow guns. Is that this year?
We do. We brought in 17 new guns in August. We were able to install them all, but they aren't all actually quite running yet, but that's just an ongoing project. You know, with any construction project, there's delays, but we're excited that they're here, and it has enabled us to move around guns more readily and do some serious snowmaking coverage much more efficiently than in the past, so we're excited about that.
Okay, good luck, Deanna, calling from Black Mountain of Maine. Megan, it's kind of always something, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, one comment on Deanna there, you know, a trend that we're seeing with the skiers, they have so many guns that are now more permanently mounted that there are hundreds and hundreds of snow guns on the trails of Maine right now that we go through the process now of resurfacing. So the major snowmaking has been completed, and now as soon as it cools off, all these guns will be turned on. They'll just lay down a couple of inches of snow so that the conditions on the surface are really great for skiing again, and it won't take very long. So we'll recover very quickly. And
Liz on Facebook writes, 3 months ago, we moved from Alaska to Maine and couldn't be happier. Yep, we gave up, and I might pronounce this wrong, Chugach backcountry for Maine Sunday River corduroy. Let me read that again. We gave up Chugach backcountry powder for Maine Sunday River corduroy. Do we miss the powder? Yes, but the passion and efforts on Nordic groomed and glading efforts in Western Maine have us happy to be here. Bethel is exploding with efforts in snow sports. Mm-hmm. That's your
great,
world.
That's great job.
That's the world. Yeah, I know, Liz. That's a perfect. She's great. I know exactly who that is. Yeah. She's a wonderful model for what can happen in a small town, and if you invest in the community, invest in what you're doing, it becomes an attractive place for people to move to and live there year round and participate in community and ski and play and be able to work there. Yeah. So
yeah, I mean, we see winter recreation and mountain recreation as an important part of the whole workforce development in the state of Maine. I mean, the rural economy of Maine is so dependent on what we're doing in the mountains. And as services improve and activities improve and broadband connection improves, you know, we're going to see more young people moving to our mountain towns, putting kids in the schools and utilizing everything that's there. So, I mean,
yes, and the realtors now talk about the trails, the facilities, the outdoor recreation activities, whereas before I don't think they did as much. And now they say, look what's here for you to participate in.
And we see that all the way down to the coast. You know, some of these 55-plus housing developments, I mean, they are featuring trails as a primary consideration when you're looking at a new place to live. So the trail economy is from the coast of Maine right to the top of the mountains.
We'll go to Richard calling from Greenville. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm one of two folks that did the bulk of the work on the restoration of Big Squaw's lower lift, the triple, on Big Squaw Mountain here in Greenville. And during that process, we had a problem of electronics that no one could solve. And when they reopened, they ran it without any safeties. It's the only way they could run it. And I turned them into the chief inspector of the state of Maine. And I found out a problem with our tramway safety process. The operators of the lift never were made to talk to the chief inspector, and he closed my case without ever talking to the operators, and I lost my job. So I'd like to see protections for lift operators and resort employees in the state of Maine when they speak out, when they see something wrong. And presently, Speaker Gideon's office is working on this for me, but I'd just like to make that comment and hear what your folks think about having something in process to protect resort employees. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Richard.
Well, I don't know. You know, we've worked with the tramway board for the, for the 40 years that I've been involved in the ski business at Maine, all my years at Saddleback and here at Ski Maine. I would say that John Burphy, the chief inspector, has been very aggressive in everything that he does. We all have to abide by the ANSI code, which is a national code, which is updated every year or 18 months. And, I think skier safety is exemplary at the ski areas, and I'm confident that I'm not quite sure of the particular case
right.
He talks about.
Well, there ought to be a whistleblower protection no matter what the industry.
I would think so. It's a little outside of my scope at this point.
Yeah, Richard, thanks for your call. A question from Steve. Any information on when and if Saddleback will reopen?
Greg, you mean?
From Steve.
I'm confident that they'll be back. I mean, they're an important part of the whole recreation industry here in the state of Maine. I spent 18 years of my career there, and so I have a lot of blood, sweat, and tears on that hill. And, there's a lot of infrastructure. There's a lot of value. I'm not privy to all of the details of all the negotiations other than talks continue between potential buyers and between the sellers. And although it's year number four that they're not going to be open, I still have the confidence that they will be back in the mix of Maine recreation.
We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Center Conway, New Hampshire. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. And say hello to Greg for me. I ran a cross-country skier in Jackson, New Hampshire for 38 years. So I've got some background in cross-country skiing, and I thought I might put my viewpoints in about cross-country skiing means to me in the broad opportunity ranges that the sport provides. It not only provides recreational skiing for beginner skiers, intermediate skiers, and expert skiers on groomed trails, but cross-country skiing can be a sport as simple as skiing across the field with your sweetie and sitting on a log and having a picnic lunch in the sunshine. It can be going out into the forest on a groomed trail and really enjoying a winter day. It can be upwards of citizen racing, or even if you take it to the highest level, Olympic racing. It can be backcountry skiing with heavier gear on mountain trails, exploring high elevation peaks. So cross-country skiing, to me, has an extraordinary range of opportunities at all levels. The one thing I found, even as an expert skier over the years, is that the first time every year is a really hard day, and to persevere the first experience and continuing on, cross-country skiing provides a really wonderful way to literally dancing through the forest, and that to me is what cross-country skiing is about.
Well, Tom, that's very beautiful, and would I sum up your advice to people by saying if you try it once, be sure and try it a second time?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Had a good first day. Today.
Thank you for calling in. Do you all have anything to add to what Tom said?
No, I think just the point is that, when the snow is on the ground, you should be out skiing. I mean, we've seen it right here. We've had some great skiing right here in the Portland area because we've had some early snowstorms. And, with the weather, getting a thaw like this, I mean, you want to take advantage of it the day that the snow is on the ground. And Maine, the sun sets early, but there's still some great skiing after dark and all the great new headlamps today, you can really enjoy it.
We've been talking a lot about the early season this year. Megan, what does it mean for the economic viability of a small area to have snow and have snow early?
Oh, it means so much. Everyone gets very excited and they tend to buy their passes. We have one of our deadlines December 15th. And so to know that they're already skiing and that there's snow and there's more than one little trail open is just wonderful. So it's a huge economic boost.
I mean, this year, Tikkum opened with 100% of their Nordic and 100% of the Alpine. I mean, on the day one, that's phenomenal.
Yes.
Look, and Megan's just, for the record, grinning ear to ear. I think she's been out. We do have to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the World Affairs Council of Maine, engaging and educating people of all ages to become global citizens. Learn more at wacmaine.org. And the State Theater in Portland, presenting The Wood Brothers live in concert on Friday, January 25th. Tickets available at statetheaterportland.com.
A school in Western Massachusetts is working to help kids deal with hardship.
They have such adult worries, some of them. Money. Who's picking me up? How am I getting home? Can I do these after-school activities? Can we afford this?
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll visit a trauma-informed school. And big demand for offshore wind power is breaking records at auction.
This is just unprecedented.
Please join us.
Next is coming up at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. You are all caught up on the news and in the mood for something else. Then you remember there's the Maine Public Classical Holiday Stream online. A perfect choice, just what you wanted. Terrific holiday music, well-known and not so well-known. Christmas carols and instrumental and vocal music for the winter solstice still ahead. Wall-to-wall music of the holidays, the way it should be. Give it a try. The Maine Public Classical Holiday Stream at mainepublic.org or on the Maine Public app. Enjoy.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your questions about skiing in Maine this season. My guests, Greg Sweetser, Executive Director of Ski Maine, Gabe Perkins, Executive Director of Mahoosic Pathways, and Megan Roberts, a skier for more than 50 years and author of Titcom, A Mountain of Ski Memories. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Greg, when you walked in, I said, oh, you have a sunburn, thinking that you had been out on the slope so often. But it really a more serious story to talk about there.
Yeah, I definitely have a little bit of color right now. Having an entire life of working outside between the ski industry and the apple orchard I own in Cumberland, I've found that sunscreen has been a vitally important factor that maybe I didn't use enough of. I've had several cases of skin cancer and melanoma and a couple of surgeries at my young age. And I did a PSA for Maine Cancer Foundation during their Skin Cancer Awareness Month to try to highlight the importance of using sunscreen. The National Skiers Association has recognized this, and for all of our employees, we have a sun-safe program that we promote the use of sunscreen to instructors, lift operators, everybody. And really, I mean, as any doctor says, if you're outdoors, even in the state of Maine, any month of the year to use the sunscreen.
And there's more proactive efforts now.
Yeah, there's a lot. Maine Cancer Foundation has been very active. They now are providing, on some pilot basis, sunscreen dispensers at some state parks, at some ski areas, and I think maybe at Hadlock Field, so that people are getting used to the fact that people have gotten used to hand sanitizers. So let's get them into the same thing with with the sunscreen. So
that's not the only kind of safety measure you're encouraging this season.
No, you know, talking about, we hit a little skier safety note. It's been a great educational program that the use of helmets. The Northeast is the number one highest use. Nearly 90% of the skiers and boarders in the Northeast wear a helmet when they're skiing. And with kids, it's nearly 100%. And that's been an educational initiative by the industry to get people aware of the importance of wearing safety protection and helmets. And just pointed out that, again, we can change people's habits. And the helmet success story in the ski industry has been one of those stories.
All right. And Gabe, I want to ask you, I meant to ask you earlier in the program, I have an article right in front of me about a new pass in for Maine's Nordic ski areas? This is new this year?
Yeah, it's new this year, but it's not a new idea, right, to have a reciprocal pass or a pass that's available at a variety of places. So we took a note from people like Tom in New Hampshire and offered the Maine pass, which is if you buy your season's pass at any of the following locations, Saddleback, Titcomb, thank you, Megan, Bethel Village Trails, our location in Bethel, Pineland, or Quarry Road in Waterville, you can then show that pass at any of those partnering systems to get a half-price day ticket. So to get back to that affordability question, if you go in for a season's pass at one place, you can come and go around the state because conditions are different or there's races and there's events that are fun at all these places. So it's kind of fun to have a packaged concept, and my staff member Sarah came up with the idea or saw it in New Hampshire. I was like, we're going to do that in Maine, and we did it, and everybody signed on, and it's really great to have that partnership.
Well, good luck with that, and congratulations. And Megan, before we return to calls, you were talking about sort of the thing you're thankful for this season is how many ski areas have histories, that it's not just Titcomb that you've written the book on.
Right, and that now there are a number of books written from a number of the ski areas, and that the history is being preserved. The other thing that I would say is if people are taking a lot of pictures, it would be nice if they up the DPI a little when they use their smartphones, because otherwise there won't be any future books on the history.
We'll go to Neil, who's calling from Buxton. Hi, Neil. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just want to really raise more of an idea than a question, but I know Maine has a huge rainy day fund, and I'm just curious why they haven't used it to maybe buy or lease Saddleback. You know, it's quite the rainy day for the people up there and their economy.
That's some creative thinking.
Yeah, I know that there has been some discussions, from the ownership and with the state. I'm not exactly sure what that has been. I actually saw Governor-elect Janet Mills yesterday, and we did talk a little bit about Saddleback and Squaw and the importance of these areas to the inland economy. And, you know, I don't know that money would be available, but she is, you know, I think it's on her radar screen to do what she can do to support, you know, what's happening in the mountains. And I think that's a really good sign for the future.
Thank you, Neil. David on Facebook says Midcoast Conservancy's Hidden Valley Nature Center in Jefferson has 1,000 acres with 30 miles of Nordic trails, most of which are groomed. The season has been great, but on pause today. Think snow. So we'll go to Todd calling from Rumford. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I just want to say I just love skiing, no matter what type of skiing it is, or riding, Nordic, Alpine. And this is just one of those reset days for us where, you know, you have to be really adaptable in Maine and you got to be ready and chomping at the bit for that next big storm that comes through. And you got to watch the weather and know where to go and know what gear to choose to make the most of that day.
All right. Well, thanks, Todd. Today's a good day to do the laundry and everything else you don't want to do on a skiing day, right? We'll go to Anne Marie calling from Westbrook. Hi, Anne Marie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious to know on the price, the cost of skiing. Why is it so expensive?
Well, I guess this weather pattern is a perfect example, is that the areas that are going to be in the best shape after this snowstorm are those that have had the extensive snowmaking system. Since skiing began in the 1930s and prior to that, the January thaw has always been part of, you know, a New England winter. So we know that we're going to get a thaw virtually every month of the year. So snowmaking has been part of the industry since the late 60s, and we're just reaching such a level of efficiency and capacity, but it takes money to get there, no doubt about it. And again, Powderhouse Hill is $5, and they don't have any snowmaking. Unfortunately, they're not going to be open until they get another snowstorm. But, you know, Titcomb is making snow. Sunday River is making tremendous amounts of snow. And, you know, it's really just a value quotient that the more they invest, you know, those costs have to be recovered.
Another factor is the insurance. Certainly the insurance at Titcomb, we only spend one quarter of money on snowmaking that we do on insurance to insure the ski area. Yeah. So for Titcomb, that's certainly a large portion of our our total budget.
Interesting. Yep. And the snowmaking equipment at a big resort is millions and millions of dollars, correct?
Well, I think the pipeline that Sunday River established was, you know, it was a couple million dollar project just to have a pipeline. That's not a very sexy job, but it's really important for the long term. But, you know, thinking of the affordability, I mean, Winter Kids is an organization around the state of Maine that offers, you know, all kinds of incentives to get kids outdoors. So any child aged 3 to 17, there are offers that are available through the Winter Kids program. And Winter Kids has just kicked off their new app. So all their programs will be available right on your cell phone through an app through winterkids.org. And I encourage every family to take a look at that. You can get a family membership, and whether you want to go cross-country skiing, dog sledding, snowshoeing, skiing, it's a fantastic way to really get the people out there. So it's going to cost some money because we have to invest money into all the facilities, but there are lots of ways to stretch your dollar.
Anne-Marie, thanks for your call. John on Facebook writes, I am pleased to let your listeners know that I am pleased to let your listeners know that Fierce Chase's cross-country ski trails in Monson, Maine is reopening.
Wow.
We are opening as a nonprofit by donation only for cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. We will have 5 kilometers of trails open this season and hope to have 15 kilometers open next season. Our Facebook page is Friends of a Fierce Chase Cross-Country Ski Trails.
There's a lot happening in Monson.
Yeah. There's a destination up there in Greenville for Nordic skiing with all the work that the AMC is doing on their 100-mile wilderness places.
That's right.
And
so
this is just incredible. That's
yes.
Right. Monson is where it's at.
Squaw Mountain itself is grooming about 15 kilometers of Nordic trails. And, yeah. You know, the Maine Wilderness Huts has about 100 miles. And now with Monson, it's really all these regions are becoming interconnected, which is really exciting.
An email from Marty. Great program. Don't forget Harris Farm, Maine in Dayton. Great skiing and great milk, eggs, beef, and maple yeah. syrup. Oh, making me want to ski and have something to eat at the same time. We'll go to Joe in Bangor. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. Joe from Monroe, actually. I just want to share a little, how I got into skiing back in 1966 when Colby Ski Slope was still mm-hmm. operating. Which is where the Quarry Road ski area is now, the Nordic ski area, I believe. It's interesting. My friend was a good skier, went to Sugarloaf every year, and he said, you got to get skiing, Joe. I said, well, I don't have any skis. So we went up in the attic and found a pair of boards with some old cable bindings on them that my mother had, which was probably back to the 40s. And I went to the ski slope, and they said, well, you got to have safety bindings on in case your feet come out of them. So he tied a rope around my ankle and around the binding and gave me a push down the hill. And that's pretty much how I got started. and loved it ever since and gone to, ski to Sugarloaf since then. And I was really sad to see the gondolas go away. And I had a question for Teresa. I wonder where all those gondola cars went to
Well, a lot of them got auctioned off. If you look in some people's yards or businesses, you'll see a gondola.
Right.
Some of them got auctioned off. Some are around.
Yeah, I think there may be one that was saved for the Ski Museum of Maine.
Yes, I think
so. That will be preserved. There's one right at the base of the mountain at the Rack Restaurant, which is open that you can sit in any day of the week.
Yes.
That was an iconic lift for the state of Maine.
Joe, thanks for your call. I'm going to squeeze in one more call. Howard in Portland. Hi, Howard. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I wanted to know about a recent development in downhill skiing. It actually started out west, and it goes back to the very beginnings of skiing. Walk up the hill and ski back down the hill on alpine skis.
Okay, Howard. Thanks for that
Absolutely.
Call. Some places open a little bit early, right? Because that can be tricky.
Almost every area now does have an uphill policy so that it's there are some rules and regulations as to what trails you can go up, but skinning. So a lot of people have this all-terrain binding set up. And, I mean, there are probably hundreds of people in the state of Maine that on a Saturday morning are hiking up these mountains, and the skiers just need to control where they are because they're out grooming and snowmaking as well. But, no, it's a fast-growing sport. A lot of the ski shops are beginning to expand into that.
Oh, thanks, Howard, for your call. That is our last call. Unfortunately, so many emails and calls we were not able to get to. Lots of people interested in the topic. And thank you, our guests, for being here today. Megan Roberts, former president of Ski Maine Association, has a new book, Titcomb, A Mountain of Ski Memories. Gabe Perkins, executive director of Mahoosic Pathways, and Greg Sweetser, executive director of Ski Maine. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. Our theme was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. We'll have some special NPR holiday programming next week, then some rebroadcasts. Have a wonderful holiday season. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling.